Hi, I'm Chris Walker, and it's time to listen to the interviews I conducted on Island Life on Saturday, the 24th of November, 2012. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday the 24th of November, I talked to Hera Mons from Waiheke Island Council of Social Services, Caroline Forsyth from the Artworks Tenants Group. I discussed the upcoming Christmas Festival with Deputy Chair of the Waiheke Local Board, Joe Holmes, and I talked to one of the organisers of the In the Air Poetry Festival, Sue Fitchett, and I also caught up with Di Stoddart from Waiheke Library. And we've got Hera in the studio here from Waiheke Island Council of Social Services. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Chris.
So there's a lot going on at the moment.
There are quite a few things. First, I would like to talk on behalf of Living Without Violence. They asked me they couldn't get anybody up here today. So I just wanted to remind people of the commemoration of the International Day of the White Ribbon Day. It's men standing against violence towards women. And that is happening tomorrow. There's a motorbike rally starting at Charlie Farley's at 10 o'clock. I think our sergeant and one other constable will be taking part on this one. And at 11 o'clock here at the Ellison Park, flag bearing and also some speeches. And hopefully people can come up. Hopefully some men can come up and support this, because I think it is important, because a lot of women have died through violence by men, and that is a really sad thing, and it is important to remember these things and also for us women to support the men in standing up and doing something about it.
So the motorbike ride's kind of an awareness raising, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of draw attention, yeah. And then at Ellison Park will be where we kind of get the chance to talk about some of those issues.
Yeah, and some people hopefully come up who have experienced violence against themselves, some women. And then there are some refreshments, and this will be happening at the theatre foyer here at Artworks.
So, and on the island we do have support through Living Without Violence.
Yeah, they have done an amazing job. And it's just, yeah, why? Because we are there to support each other, to support these different organizations and community groups. And that's great, you know, because we all have something that's close to our heart. But we all believe we have to work together to actually change something. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're working both with victims of violence and people who might have been perpetrators of violence as well, aren't they?
Yeah, it's a bummer that nobody actually could come, because they could fill you in much more. So I don't want to say
so
anything.
So what's the time at Ellison Park again?
11 o'clock.
11, so you can get along there and find out more. And also they're pretty easily, easily to get hold of. The Citizens Advice Bureau could put you in touch with them and so on.
Yeah. And they're also in our community directory we have just brought out.
And where can people get that community directory?
You can get it at the library, you can get it at the Citizens Advice Bureau, and I think Roger, our treasurer, he has put an ad in to give us a ring and we can deliver it.
And it's really worthwhile having one of those in your kitchen drawer, because I don't know how many times, you know, there might be something, you know, really serious where you need to get hold of someone, say, like Living Without Violence, or maybe, you need to get hold of the SPCA, or you want to know where you can play bridge. And all of that's in there. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's important. So if you haven't received one, give Roger a ring. And or go to the Citizens Advice Bureau. We have made a few mistakes, we have realized. If anybody out there has the wrong number been put in, then just give us a ring as well, and we change it for our next issue.
Yeah, it's a good publication.
Mm.
All right, so we've got the Living Without Violence event on Sunday, but also coming up is, I suppose, with the Council of Social Services being an umbrella of a number of organisations on the island, you're aware of just how many people give their time and energy to community organisations on the island.
Mm. I don't have the exact number. I know Denise Roach has quite a few numbers. She will hopefully come and have a little speech about the volunteers on Waiheke Island. Ireland, and they're amazing. I mean, we couldn't work for, like, Friends of the Street. They're all volunteers, you know, going out at night. And there are so many organizations who have so many volunteers. And this year, it's the International Day of the Volunteer. That's on the 5th of December. That's a Wednesday. We have sent, WICOS has sent out invitations for people to come along, to organizations to nominate some of their volunteers to come along. And we prepare and we serve some food to all these volunteers. It's sort of an early dinner. And the local board has given us some money to do that, actually. And also, you know, to show people that we do appreciate what they are doing in our community, to help, to give up their time and do that. That's so important. I don't know where we would be. So that's happening on the 5th of December at the Piritahi Marae from 5 to 7.
And there are volunteer organisations that are able to kind of nominate a number of people to come along to that, aren't they?
Yeah. If you haven't received a letter from our coordinator, please give her a ring. Her number is 372-8258. I just had to visualise it. Yeah, I repeat this. 372-8258. Yeah, and her name is Maggie, and she will just tell you all about it and send you out a form.
That's great. And, I mean, good opportunity for people to get together and share ideas and congratulate each other here.
Yeah, celebrate, you know, and say thank you to all these people. Yeah, last year we did it. That's our fifth, actually. Last year we had about 50 people coming along, and that was great. And they were all really happy because they didn't have to cook.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think also there's a number of those organisations, don't you find, that people in the community assume that they're either government or local government organisations, you know, like things like, I don't know, budgeting service, for example. People kind of assume that, okay, this is a government initiative, whereas it's actually community
yeah,
run.
Yeah, a lot of the groups who are involved with the WICOS are actually sort of community run and supported. I mean, they get a little bit government support, but not that much. And we all do need our volunteers, and we do appreciate them. So that's just to celebrate them.
Good stuff. 5th of December.
5th of December.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Are we up to our phone call part, or have we got something else to cover?
Briefly want to say something else that we have, because we have decided to do something, to work on suicide prevention. We had a Lifeline organizing a assist workshop that is towards suicide prevention and recognizing certain thoughts in people, certain behavior in people. And we have planned in February to run three courses. They are a little bit, they are not as long as the other ones. There were 2 days. These ones are 4-hour courses just to recognize certain behavior. There will be three courses run. One is for our young people, and the other one is for community in general and for the agencies. And there are up to 30 people, and we're just looking for some funding to actually make it free to everybody. And that will happen in February. So hopefully somebody can come up and talk about it closer to the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, good stuff. I mean, it's such an important thing to address.
It is. And just, you know, what happened last month, it is so sad, and maybe we all feel like, what could we have done to actually prevent something? And we have to learn from it and say, okay, we all need to be more aware and look at and talk to people and find out what we can do to help and how to recognize certain behavior.
Okay. Now, in a moment, we're going to be talking to someone about the Youth Council, which is a new initiative. And we've recently had the election of a Waiheke Islander, Matariki Roche, to that council. So we're going to be catching up on that in just a moment, and we're going to get our guest on the phone. On the other end of the line, I have Alf, who's a community advisor with Auckland Council. Are you there, Alf? And we've got Hira from the Waiheke Island Council of Social Services on the line as well. So, Alf, so you've been involved in the establishment of the Youth Council. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what's driven that initiative and what you hope to achieve with it.
Okay, basically what happened was when Marilyn Brown came into the office, one of his main objectives was to establish a youth council so that there was a member of there was a member from every local board representative on this council, and the purpose of that was for there to be a youth voice. So whatever issues or things that needed to be addressed, youth based, whatever issues there were, every representative from each council would be able to present this to the mayor. So they'd be sitting with the mayor maybe every month. So that was kind of the main objective of it.
And some of the councils before amalgamation had these kind of youth councils in effect. Was that, how universal was that across the former councils?
Yeah, there were a few local boards that still had these youth councils. So they didn't necessarily have to go through the process of an election, where they had to, you know, go through and elect a representative with their councils or their panels that they currently had. They just had to elect within. So we had did it slightly differently with Waiheke, as well as a few other local boards as well.
And was there support there from all of the local boards for it? I mean, was that something that they all saw as a worthwhile initiative?
From what I had seen, yeah, every local board was for this. So yeah, it's been widely received.
Excellent. And now tell us about, I mean, I suppose one of the difficulties when it comes to these things is, you know, there's always discussions, aren't there, about how you define youth. I'm aware of, you know, some international organisations, you know, like say the union movement, where they have crazy definitions of youth that would go up to 40 years old. So how did you go about deciding, and who this was targeted at?
Okay, I wasn't involved with how it was targeted. It was done by the youth advisor and their team. So they'd gone through the national standards and pretty much looked across the board how that definition was put across. So the definition that we were working with was from the ages of 12 to 24. Usually a lot of us would assume that, you know, you're an adult by the time you're 18, but yeah, like you said, there's been some crazy definitions of youth. And 24 was the final mark.
That must bring some challenges in working with a group that has that diversity of age and interest.
I guess it does. I mean, you know, you've got, you know, so for example, if you've got someone that's 12 that's representing one local board, and another person that's 21 or 24, they're going to be totally different in what they see as a youth issue. But I guess, if that person is 12 years old and they've got, you know, the head of a 21-year-old, then it shouldn't really matter. They will be representing the view of the youth of their local board, not just their own opinions and views.
So there's an expectation that these people do kind of reach out and connect with other youth in their communities and take that representative role. What exactly do you, you know, I mean, what's next for the people who have been elected onto this council? What are some of their first kind of duties or obligations?
Well, they do get support by a team within Auckland Council to, you know, to help them grow within the role. So it's not as if you know, they're left on their own to swim by themselves. They've got a team surrounding them that will, you know, go through a process of, you know, seeing where they're at, how they're going to find the information that they need to bring to all their council meetings, but also looking at establishing youth panels that support that person within their local board. For example, we're looking at doing that in Waiheke as well. It's the candidates that put their name in the hat. We'd really like them to form a group so that they can help the nominated native person, Matariki, in this case, with her work. So it's not as if Matariki will be on her own.
But it's also very important to actually, because we have discussed it, that it's really important to work with the other four young people who haven't been voted and put them together And because it is so important that young people actually see that we as adults are listening. And yes. So that was the first step, and I don't know how far you have got there, but I think it is important to keep on to keep these young people together and say you can actually do something, and hopefully they can work with our local board.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and what kind of mechanisms have been talked about, and what is the interaction between, you know, because these people are elected from local board areas, what kind of expectations are there around their interaction with those boards?
Oh, sorry, you're just breaking up there. Sorry, mate.
Yeah, so we're just asking about what are the expectations around the relationship between the youth representatives and their local boards?
There isn't going to be an expectation because, you know, it's not only that these representatives are feeding in directly to the mayor. You know, they will need a strong relationship with their local board as well. So it's, you know, the local board will have...
Yeah, one person is really supportive and really wants to work, and this is Paul Walden. The other ones I haven't. No, actually, I must say Don has supported them as well and said, look, it is important that whatever happens, it comes from the young people. So he was supportive, but Paul is quiet. You know, he is really keen to bring some new people up and hopefully get some younger people involved in the local board as well. So, yeah.
And does the mayor have a get together planned for all of the newly elected people?
Yeah, he does. There will be a formal induction in January, I believe. So there will be a big ceremony with all the new candidates that have been elected for more local boards. So by then, the youth panel will have a full 21. Members of 21.
Excellent. And is there a plan to kind of move the election of the youth panel into the same cycle as the local government elections, or how will that work into the future?
At this stage, I believe it is going to be a 2-year process. So once you get into this role, you're in the role for 2 years. So I believe the process will remain the same at this stage.
Great. Okay. Well, thanks very much, Al, for joining us on the line.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been my pleasure.
There we go. We were talking to Alf, who's a community advisor from Auckland Council, and just talking us through the establishment of the Mayor's Youth Council with representatives from each local board. And just to remind you that our local representative here on Waiheke is Matariki Roach. So, so it sounds like there's some promise there, Hera, of good things to come.
I hope so, and it is good too that, for example, as I said just before, Paul Walden is really encouraging and really supportive that we actually encourage these young people and listen to them, because we do need to listen. I think that is an important fact, that we don't seem to listen enough to young people, what they want, what they need. A lot of us older ones think, oh, we know it all. We don't, you know.
I do.
Okay, good one. Okay, I will ask you a few things later then.
All right. Well, thank you very much for popping in this morning.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and remember, we do have those two events coming up, the Living Without Violence White Ribbon Day tomorrow, with the motorbike ride from Charlie Farley's at 10 and the gathering at Allison Park at 11, and then Volunteers Day on the 5th of December. And if you from a community organisation and would like to kind of, I suppose, recognise and celebrate the role of your volunteers, it'd be great to have your participation in that.
Nicely said, thank you.
Right, cheers. We've got Caroline Forsyth here from the Artworks Tenants Group. She's part of the board of the gallery, here to talk about, you know, what's going on at Artworks. Everyone's obviously gone past. They've seen the place fenced off, the big signs up there, and the demolition of the studios from the courtyard there, the courtyard all closed. So things are looking grim, but apparently there's still plenty going on, Caroline.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, I agree with you. It certainly does look grim as you come past on Ocean View Road. But as they say, you have to suffer to be beautiful. And I think what the council is going to do in terms of landscaping the future courtyard is going to make it a really cool place for the Waiheke community.
So in the meantime, is the whole place closed down? That's it? We shut, pull down the shutters? And
absolutely not. Everybody's still operating the theatre, Ajay's restaurant, Whitaker's, the gallery, and indeed the temporary library and the cinema. And there is access through the old courtyard, both from Ocean View Road and from Korora Road. It's been tidied up even in the last couple of days. They've taken down some trees, so it's easier to see where you're going. And we just have to endure that until the new library is up and running. I think the worst phase, the demolition phase, will be over soon.
And there is a little bit of signage that's been put out to say it's business as usual.
There is indeed. And I know a number of the tenants are looking at putting bigger, splashier, more eye-catching signs out as well.
Yeah, oh, that's good, because I think, I mean, some of them in particular must really be suffering, are they? If you heard feedback from people, if it had an impact on their custom?
Well, it's only just really happened, and I think everybody was onto it pretty quickly. You know, when the fence went up and the dust started rising. Yeah, there's been sort of anecdotal evidence that tour operators, for example, who take people to Whitaker's and the gallery, have thought that the whole place was closed. I think the cinema and Adjad's and the library, that's more local, so, you know, people struggle through the jungle, as it were, to get there.
Yeah, and so the tenants group, you've put out some releases, and obviously you're focusing that at those tour operators and so on to say business is still on.
Yeah, we put out a press release earlier in the week, which both the Marketplace and Gulf News carried it, but also all the various tenants have sent it on to their distribution lists, and a lot of that should cover a lot of the tour operators.
Excellent. And, I mean, we're in for the long haul, really, aren't we, over the period of construction, probably a year before we start to see the place come back fully to life, isn't it?
It will be a year. But one of the first things that's going to happen, which I think will make a difference, is that the old stage in front of the library is going, apparently, according to the council. And at the moment, it's sort of sticking out in the only available space. It will make do for a while, but I think the new library will be worth it.
Mm. And I suppose that the other challenge after the library is constructed is also to bring back some of that. I mean, there was a lot of life in the courtyard because of the community groups and the organisations that were operating in there. So I suppose there'll be a challenge, won't there, to kind of get that life back into that space.
There will be, but I think there are a couple of things to bear in mind. One is that the old library space is going to be available, and the tenants are being asked to think about what that might be used for. I think the general consensus is in favour of working artists. But also, I think we're looking at things like having a little, festival to reopen the courtyard, that sort of thing. And indeed, the library opening itself is likely to demonstrate pretty clearly that, everything's back, not to where it was before, but in fact to something that hopefully will be bigger and better.
Good stuff. So your key message at the moment is, yep, we're still here, still operating.
Absolutely.
Don't be scared away.
No, absolutely, that's correct. And, I mean, the parking on Korora Road is still available. Everything's open as usual. There are no changes.
Good stuff. All right. Well, good luck through the next year.
Thanks very much, Chris.
Okay, cheers.
Bye.
Caroline Forsyth from the Artworks Tenants Group, just to remind us that everything is still go up here at Artworks. And, of course, we're part of that complex as well. So pleased to see some refurbishment going on. And like everyone else here, we'll be pleased to see what comes out of the other end.
Wakey Radio.
Coming up in a couple of weeks on Saturday, or 1 week actually, Saturday the 1st of December, is the Waiheke Christmas Festival. And here to talk to us about that is Joe Holmes, Deputy Chair of the Waiheke Local Board. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Chris.
So the Christmas Festival, what's it all about? What's going to be happening on the day?
Well, lots of things, Chris, and we've gone to a lot of trouble this year to try and make it a really interactive occasion for the children. We were finding that the Santa Parade, gradually more and more community groups and businesses weren't taking part, and I think that's partly because the financial constraints, the time constraints that people have these days. And we were finding that there just wasn't the enthusiasm there for the parade as it had been in the past. So we just got our thinking caps on and talked to the events team in town. And together we've come up with this idea of a Christmas festival. So we'll still be closing off Ocean View Road, but we'll be having a two-hour, basically, if you like, a street party, a festival, a fun day for the children to take part in, and lots of interactive events for them to actually participate in.
So, I mean, there is something about the excitement of a parade, though, isn't there? And, I mean, a few people have been commenting and saying, well, you know, that's a shame to see that go, because kids love the parade, and, I mean, people love to get in and get down the street and so on.
Yeah, I take your point, and, you know, we don't want to lose that enthusiasm, not at all. And so we've got lots and lots of things for them to do. We've got bouncy castles, we've got jousting, we've got street painting, street walkers, clowns, face painting, all kinds of things going on for them to do. Lots of entertainment too. There's going to be a stage set up in the middle of Oniroa there. Mahana's going to be providing the music, but we've also got some local entertainers doing the music. I've got a little list here. We've got Jean Fraser Holt, who sang the Rainbow Connection in Old. Mitzi O'Brien. We've got Portia Coleman, who'll be accompanied by Ben on the guitar. So there's lots of local people like that actually taking part and entertaining the crowds, and I'm sure there'll be lots of crowds because there's lots of things happening.
So in the past, say groups, I don't know, like say the toy library, the dirt track, the radio station, have all participated and put floats in the parades. What's there for them?
Oh, that's great, Chris, that you should mention that. Yeah, instead of having floats, they've got static displays. So already we've had a really good uptake on those static displays, and people, groups can decorate a static display for themselves. There'll be prizes, just like there were prizes in the past for the floats. There are prizes now for decorating your static display. Also, they've got time. They've got time to talk to people about the groups and what they do, so they can show off all their services. Businesses can do a similar sort of thing. They can promote their businesses. So where you had maybe pumps and plumbing and the like, go wearing floats past behind, they can have a static display there. Not to be selling things, because we don't want any hawkers, as it were, because it's a community thing. But there's all those opportunities that there were before. There are prizes for the best displays. The shops themselves are really taking part in this in a way that they perhaps haven't been able to in some ways with the old Santa parade. The only row of shops have really got behind the whole thing. They've put together a fantastic package to encourage people, if you like, to do their shopping in Waiheke for Christmas. They've got a $2,000 prize. I think it's a travel prize, which will be available for people who shop in the only row of shops on the day. And that'll be drawn actually during the festival itself, towards the end of the festival. People have to be there, I understand, in order to win. But so that's a sort of encouragement for people to hang around as well. But, you know, mum and dad can go off and shop and the kids can play. It's just going to be a great sort of street party.
Okay. So just a couple of things that I just want to pick up on there. So that, I suppose one of the things, you know, you were talking about the decorating, the static displays and so on. I suppose that we've always had that people choice and element there. But the thing that's always struck me about, you know, to go back to the parade issue, is that, and what wins the popular choice, is it's kids. And it's, you know, it's the kids dressed up and dancing and singing and all the rest of it. And kids can kind of do that down the street and back up on the back of a truck, but they're not going to do that for 2 hours of a set of display, are they?
No, they're not, but they can take part, and it'll be interesting to see how it does actually work out. I mean, this, at the end of the day, you know, we didn't feel that the other the Santa Parade itself was working very well, so this is a chance for us to try out a new format. We think it's going to be really successful because there's lots of things for children to do. You know, Santa's still going to be there. He's still going to make his arrival as he always used to. We've got a complete grotto put aside. Fantastic that Take Note Toy Gallery and Bailey's have all, along with the Popperwells who own that building, have allowed the foyer of that building to be allowed for a grotto. And Santa's going to be there in his grotto. He's got lots of things to give away for the kids, you know, and they'll just love that. Mums and dads can take pictures of the children with Santa rather than him just sort of come and go and just disappear. You know, the Santa parade really lasted only about half an hour. And so here we've got 2 hours where people have got lots to do for the whole time and to be entertained. And I think we're going to be having a really, really great street party.
Mm. So it's in Only Row, or in Ocean View Road, yeah, again. And yeah, I know that in the past there has been some concern from the businesses around the closing of the road.
Mm, that's right.
So why the decision to, you know, given that you're not having a parade any longer and it could be held anywhere, why the decision to have it in Ocean View Road?
I think tradition. I mean, traditionally it's been there, so it's kind of where people expect it to be. The businesses in Only Row are the people, in a way, who've suffered in the past because of the Santa Parade, because this is one of their most important days of the year, and they've in the past given up their, if you like, their takings on a day like that as a community service. So, you know, this is perhaps a little way of allowing them to be open for business on that day. So that hopefully will suit them. The other good thing that's coming out of this is the Only Row of businesses have got together in a way that we haven't seen for quite some time. As you're probably aware, there's no business association, but because of the cooperative nature of this, the businesses have got together and they're seeing this as a really positive day. And hopefully there'll be a business association comes out of this, which will only be a good thing for the island. And then that will, you know, not hopefully not just for Only Row, but for all the businesses on the island.
So I know you've been having to kind of tread a fine line, because, I mean, in some ways what's been set up at the festival has the elements of a market, but without things for sale, isn't it?
That's right. That's absolutely right. So we don't want to encroach on the market at Ostend either. You know, that's on a Saturday. So it really is just for groups and businesses to show off their wares but not sell their wares as a sort of street trading type thing. We don't really want to encourage street trading. If businesses themselves, for example, the cafes and restaurants, if they've got some area of their own which isn't council land outside their businesses and they want to put something out for the day, and I think they probably will, that's all well and good. But that's, you know, not what we're about. You know, we're about the community and the kids.
So this is a change. What will be the criteria of whether it's successful or whether we go back to a parade or whether we try something completely new?
I think we'll see for ourselves. I'm thinking, you know, the day will tell us, the kids will tell us, the parents will tell us. You know, we'll just know, won't we? I mean, you're going to be there, I understand, and that's just fantastic that you've offered that. That's just wonderful. And I think it will be self-evident, or not, as the case may be.
Yeah. And there are some other local board Christmas events coming up as well, aren't there?
There are. We've got the Carols by the Sea, which is coming up on the 15th of December. That's a Saturday. This year, we've very much put it into the hands of Pat Ehrlich and V12 to organise the singing, because, you know, Pat Ehrlich is a great local talent and a great master of ceremonies. So we're also thinking that's going to be a really fabulous evening, really fabulous.
Yeah, and that's the 15th of December.
15th of December, the Saturday, 6:30 to 8:30 down at Little Only Row, where it traditionally has been.
And what exactly is the role of, say, the local board in supporting an event like that? I mean, is it just putting your name to it, or?
Oh, no. In this particular case, it's quite huge. Because there's so much more organising to be done, for example, for the Christmas festival, our events spokesperson, who's Don McKenzie, who, sorry, can't be here today, he's been heavily involved in the organisation of this, along with our event staff, and we've got wonderful event staff in town. We've got, I'll just read out their names here, Leilana Meredith, Sharon Sukur, and of course our own Mickey Taitapra has been involved in this year's event as well. Probably a lot of people know Mickey Tai. He's a great, great asset, great organiser. So we've got some really good people behind this event.
Good stuff. So Saturday the 1st of December.
Saturday the 1st of December.
Yep.
And remember, there'll be other things going on, Chris. I mean, you know, as well as all the things I've mentioned, people like the, I believe we might be having a visit from the world's oldest flash mob, which is just, if anyone has not seen our world oldest flash mob, they really want to get along and see these people. It's just a fantastic thing that's being organised on the island by Billy. Just fabulous.
Yeah, and you say the community groups are coming on board with us?
Yes, they are. They are. Yeah, they're because, I mean, there is an incentive with prices, of course. But yes, we've already been approached by lots of community groups. Actually, people who we've not seen for some time taking part in the Santa Parade are actually going to be taking part in the Christmas festival. So that's good.
All right. Okay. So keep tuned, and you get along there next Saturday, 1 o'clock. Things kick off.
The roads will be closed between 10 and 4. It gives an hour for people to set up their stalls and so on, and an hour to put them down at the end. But the actual festival itself is between 1 and 3. So do come, you know, do come along, everybody. It will just be a fabulous day. And in case it rains, just, you know, hopefully it won't, but in case it does, the rain date is the Sunday.
Okay, thanks very much, Joe Holmes, Deputy Chair of the Local Board. In the Air is the name of the Waiheke Poetry Festival, which is coming up next week.
On Sunday, the 2nd of December.
Yeah, and this is Sue Fitchett you listen to, who's one of the organisers of the festival. Welcome along, Sue.
Thank you very much.
So tell us a little bit about the festival and what's it's going to involve.
This will be the third year that Liz Eastman from Tivoli Bookshop and I have organised or facilitated a poetry festival for local poets and local readers on Waiheke. It's always held, or for the 3 years we've held it outside Tivoli Bookshop in the courtyard, and that's our plan again this year. Again, like the second year, we're having it just on the one day, the Sunday. In fact, it's one of the few days where there aren't other events this time of the year on Waiheke. We have people who have agreed to read, and we've also got a lot of open mic spaces for people to come along and showcase their talent or their one poem or their poem they love and read it to whoever comes along to hear that. And the time of the festival is from 11 to 1, and then we have a break for lunch, and then it's from 2 to 4. So it's a short time, but I think a glorious time for poetry to be out in the air and be heard by public. A lot of poets never read their work out loud, and poetry is something that is very much a musical sound thing, and it should be heard out loud.
Is there a thriving poetry scene on Waiheke?
I wouldn't say it's thriving. There are poets who we know, like who read on Waiheke quite often, like Selena Marsh, who will be in the festival, and people like Peter Rickers and Alex Stone and Mike Johnson, who have a long history related to poetry on Waiheke Island. From time to time, people have got together, poets have got together and shared their work. I think there's a lot of people writing, and there are small groups who are meeting, like the Catherine Mitchell group and one or two other writing groups. Liz and I have, for the last couple of years, or from the very beginning, want to encourage young writers, you know, emerging writers. So we have approached the schools, and we've been very lucky with both times having young people, you know, below the age of 17 to come and read. And we've again approached the high school and hope some young readers will come, because, you know, that is where the new poets or the emerging poets will come from, the young people who are interested in this form of writing.
So this is a curated festival rather than an open mic session?
It's a bit of both, actually. It would be horrible if we had just open mic and no one turned up and we had all these big blanks. So what we've tried to do is...
You know what would be worse, Sue? If you had open mic and heaps of people turned up and you listen to them and you go, oh, no.
Yeah, well, that could be true. And... So we approached some people just to give us some anchors, or if you like, and you know, things on the necklace of the poetry being read during the day, and then we hope other people will come in and fill in between those. It's the same format as been used in some readings in the city, like Lounge, where it's just 5 minutes, so you can't have poets going on interminably in love with their work. So it's 5 minutes of reading work and then the next person reads.
So there is a degree of leap of faith, isn't there, when you invite someone onto the program?
Oh yes, but we will have very strong timekeepers, be myself and I might have a whistle or some other mechanism to try to keep people in line. We have two very able MCs too. We have Baraka
who's a performance poet who has recently, in the last 2 or 3 years, returned to New Zealand from London. And we have in the morning, Baraka's in the morning, and we have Katie Soljak emceeing for us in the afternoon. So hopefully with the three of us, we'll have a strong and cohesive event.
And so how do you set it up down there? So you've set up your mic outside Tivoli, and then what, people just kind of lounge around Tivoli?
Yeah.
And people just lounge around in the little arcade area, or have you got seats out? Or what
Well, Liz has a number of seats because she has art events quite often. We'll be keeping an open walkway to the Eye Centre to ensure that people can, visitors and tourists can get to the Eye Centre, and beyond that line people can put the seats up and the mic will be in a place that is you know, sort of safe for the sound system we're using. And Liz also has an ability now to put a gazebo or a cell cover to an event of inclement weather, which we hope will not happen.
All right, so it could be quite you're hoping for a pleasant afternoon, sit back
and
lounge
morning.
Back and yeah, and morning and enjoy some poetry. And then what about refreshments? That's always good, isn't it?
Well, we're having very minimal refreshments this year. It's an expensive thing, and we were very lucky this year to get a discretionary grant from the local board, but that's just for sound and advertising and that sort of thing. So we'll just have a few, like, chips and fruit juice and Jaffas for the kids. And then we're encouraging people to eat at the local eateries in their lunch hour, and, you know, or to bring a packed lunch if they can't afford that, and sit in the sun, we hope, and enjoy talking to other poets.
Excellent. And you're going to share a poem with us now, aren't you? Is this one of your favourites?
Well, it's one of mine.
One of yours, even better.
But because being an organiser, often one doesn't get to read in the festival, so I thought I'd choose one of mine that's wakey-oriented.
Great.
And it's from my collection, Palava Lava Queen, and it's called I Hand You a Purse of Islands. A ferry delivers you off balance on the wharf. I lean forward and taste your tired skin. We peer into the grey. Fog is freeing, you tell me. There are no reference frames. I remember the deceptiveness of fog, ships hitting rocks, your job eating you from inside out. Floating off, you quip to a spicy destination. Beyond your laughter, islands hang in space. Coastlines no longer secured to see. Until fog rolls away, sky bursts blue over those islands adrift in the gulf. Familiar shapes royally set at the edge of vision appear and disappear according to the clarity of the air. Dependable as their names on my navigation chart. Rākino, Motuhora Papa, Tiritiri Matangi. I hand you binoculars. I hand you a purse of islands, a plain song, an unlocked frame. That's it.
Great, thank you, Sue. And just share the name of the poem with us again.
It's called A Purse of Islands.
A Purse of Islands, great. And is that book available at Tivoli?
Yes, it is. It's a collection from Auckland University Press, and it's available at Tivoli.
Excellent. So you go and check that out and pick up some local poetry. And the shop will be open and selling all those things while the festival's on.
The shop will be open and selling, and also we'll have a table for local poets who have got chapbooks or published work they want to display. And we also have a list that people can write on as a networking list if they want to contact other poets.
Great. And is it a 10 o'clock kickoff?
11 o'clock kickoff.
Yep.
11 to 1 and then 2 to 4. 11 to 1, 2 to 4.
Great. Well, thanks so much for coming in, Sue.
Thank you very much, Chris.
In the air, the Waiheke Poetry Festival outside Tivoli in the April Arcade on the 2nd of...
It's not the April Arcade. It's the courtyard.
It's the other one.
It's the courtyard between
Pendragon.
Okay.
Pendragon. Yeah. Oh, geographically challenged this morning. Jeepers. Well, you'll find it. Go to Oniroa, down the main street. Look for the people who look like poets.
Yeah.
Very kind of wordly looking people and wise. Yeah. Okay, thanks very much, Sue.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Joined by Di Stoddart from Waiheke Library. Good morning, Di. How are you?
Good morning, Chris. Good, thank you. Good.
So you've been running through how people can use the library website over the last few spots on the radio, and you're continuing on with that today?
I am. So we've covered sort of, Chris is doing this as well, I've just discovered, that some people still have the old website, as you know, which is easy because it's bookmarked and you don't get around to changing it. But it could be confusing. So if you wanted to change your bookmark now, it's Waiheke... No, it's not. Still, it's AucklandLibraries.gov.nz. So that's where you're going to get the right website, because it has been updated, and you might be in an old place otherwise.
Now, I presume at some point they'll actually turn off that redirect from the old one.
Yeah, not sure. So, because some people end up still using the classic catalogue, which I find really, you know, one-dimensional, and I never go there anymore. But some people are still using that very old classic catalogue, which, you know, change is often really difficult for some people, and even for me in some circumstances, but if you can bring yourself to go to the new website, it's totally amazing. I'm totally in love with it. It's, you find all sorts of things, and it refines your search, and yeah, it's very, very, very good. Okay, so this week we're going to be talking about managing your library card. Some people, we had a phase of giving out library cards that only had 7 digits, you know, the last 7 digits, and that's really confusing for some people when they want to start using the website as well. It's missing the first... for 7 digits. So it's really important that if that's the case, come in and replace that library card with, and it will give you a new one for free. And that still happens, actually. So just do that if you're looking at your card and it's only got 7 digits on it. When you log in, you can, on the home page, it's got a little thing that you can click on that says My Info, and that's where you go to log in to do stuff with your record, or your personal details, or what you want to do with your holds. So you'll need to log in with that 14-digit library card number, and you'll need a PIN number. That some people get stuck at that point because it's not working. What usually happens when they come into the library is because they think they haven't got a PIN number, and then what happens, the system knows they have and they swear they haven't, and of course they come to the counter and they have got an encrypted PIN number on their record, but they've just forgotten that they have. So we just redo that, and then they're away again. So that is a possibility of a difficulty. So you've logged in with your card and your PIN number. What you can do when you get there, there's a few things that I want to make people aware of that they might not be using or taking advantage of. And often, especially at this time of the year now, when people have quite a few holds, or you know, they've requested quite a few books, and they go, oh, actually, we're going away for 2 weeks over Christmas, New Year. What say these books come in, and I'm not going to be here, and I'm going to miss them. And I'm, you know, I've been waiting for this book for like 6 months because it's, you know, there's 300 holds. What they can do is freeze. Have you ever done that, Chris? Frozen your holds?
I think I have once. I mean, I rely on holds. I never look on the shelves.
Yeah. So if people are going away, you don't want to lose your place in the queue. You can actually freeze a hold, and it's really easy. And you go into with the books that you've requested, you'll see the whole list there. And on the right-hand side, there's a little box that you can tick. Freeze, 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 freeze. What will happen is that it freezes your hold, and when you get back, you can untick them, but you don't lose your place in the queue, which is really nice. You're not going to go to the bottom of the list or anything. So use that, because lots of people, especially on, well, probably any community actually, off they go somewhere and they can secure that hole by freezing it. So there's that little tip. Of course, this is the place where you can renew your books. So if 2 or 3 days before your book's due, because you can see all the due dates, you click on the left-hand side, there's a little box, you can tick, 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 renew, renew, renew. Of course, you can't if there's a bunch of people waiting for the book. But that's a really easy way to renew your books as well. And the other thing that people don't realise, because they think that we've got their reading history on our library computer, at the desk where we issue their books, we don't have any record. The system does not have any record of what someone's borrowed, but the individual person can. And in that My Info area, there's a link to My Reading History, and you click on that, and from that moment on, you can opt in, and everything that you have ever read will be listed. So as you can imagine, for some people, that's huge. So that's something that's really, really useful for lots and lots of people. So opt into your reading history. It won't record anything that you've done so far, but from the moment you do that, everything will be recorded.
Yeah, I do use that, but I use that because I get a lot of magazines out. And often it's hard to remember which issues of the magazine you've already had. So you can go back and have a look and go, oh yeah, I've already had October. I need to get the September one November one.
Yeah. So very useful. And this is also where you can change your personal details. So if you've changed your address, your phone number, you can change your PIN number here as well. That all happens there. So when you go into My Info, you are actually in the old classic format. So it's kind of, that's where people get confused as well. And when I first did my first talk, I encouraged people to do your search first in the search box, and then when you've hit request, then fill in your library card and PIN number. If you go into My Info first and log in to do your searching by going through My Info, you're in that classic catalog place, which is not the right place to be really now. So, and then you have to get back and find yourself in the new website. So it's kind of, just go into My Info if you want to do stuff with your card, but if you're searching, do the search first.
It's the transition's still a bit clunky, isn't it? I mean, there's still things which aren't as intuitive or clear as you might hope they might be with the changeover, to the new system.
Yeah, that's certainly what the feedback, we get a little bit of that feedback. Yeah, I haven't found it like that myself, but only because
you do it every day.
Inside information.
Yeah.
So it might mean a bit more, which is, I think, why some people still stick with the classic, because it's that very fundamental, you kind of click title and then you put the title in, and there's no ability to kind of move around that, because with the I don't know. It's much more interesting. I guess being in colour, it's more interesting. It kind of tells you the same stuff, really. And some people actually really like the classic. They think they can find stuff better using that program rather than the new one. So I guess everyone's just, has different ways, don't they?
Hmm. And are there online tutorials of how to use the catalogue?
Yes. I've never been there, but I'm sure there must be a help button somewhere. Maybe I'll ask that question next time I come and speak.
Yeah. It'd be quite useful to have, little tutorials that guide you through some of those common processes of searching, requesting and so on.
I know they're certainly in the digital catalogue part of the library, how to search those different databases and stuff like that.
So there you go. How much of a shift do you think there's been? I mean, you must still have a lot of people who come in and basically getting you to do at the desk what they could do themselves online on the catalogue.
Yeah, and I take that opportunity to, because I love the website so much, I take that opportunity at the counter to show them how they can do it themselves, and they get really excited. They just go, and it opens up a whole world for them. So at every opportunity, that's what I do, and the other girls as well. So it's just, but there's still, you can just tell by the customer whether they need actually support, because they're not computer savvy, which is totally cool, or if they're wanting something now at the library while they're there. Of course, we do that. But there's more and more people who are, like yourself, just requesting and just coming straight in, pick up their book that they've ordered on the website, and back out they go again and without perusing the shelves.
Good stuff. So
good stuff.
Yep. So get into the library and they can give you some tips. And you're touching base on this again next time you're in here on the show?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I've got this is the third time I've kind of talked about the website. So next week will be something different. Or next time I'm here.
Yep.
We've put up with 3 weeks of having a huge digger outside. I think they've finished most of the severe demolishing. And it'll be a bit quieter from now on, probably.
Now they just get on to, digging holes, drilling, nailing, hammering. So it'll be much quieter.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we're a little bit easier with the doors that keep shutting, which does help, believe it or not. But we're mostly excited. It is a bit hard to see it all go, but we're looking at the future and going, wow, it's just going to be so amazing having, an awesome big library for...
Yeah, well, I must admit, I went past the other day and I saw that pile of rubble, and, we used to have the radio station down there, and I thought, there's plenty of years of history and kind of interesting things that happened in those buildings.
That's
right. And all kind of gone now.
Yes. But what's going to come will be, equally as, or of course, better for everybody. And I'm sure the use of the library will go up in the community. We have over 50% of the community using us now, and I'm sure that will increase with better facilities. The youth area is going to be, it's going to be big, it's going to be funky, and hopefully more kids will just hang out there, And then by hanging out and providing a community space, there'll be that little bit of like, oh, well, I might as well borrow something, I might as well belong. So that has to be a positive.
Okay, well, let's hope. I hope that we can kind of get back that sense of a community space, which is not just the library, but the whole complex.
That's right, exactly. Good, thanks, Chris.
All right,
Chris.
Thank you very much for popping in, and we'll see you again soon.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onewarra.